They say b'shem the Arizal that he asked a very interesting question. Everybody knows that there are four gullias. Maral wrote a whole sefer about it. Four gullias, and what are they? So there's Gullus Bavel, there's Paras and Madai, there's Yavan, and there's Edom. Those are the four gullias. Learned out from a pasuk in Daniel, Nevuah of Daniel, and talk about those four gullies. The Arizal asks a question, it's an obvious question, is that if you were to think of like the one gullus that everybody thinks about being like the gullus, okay, maybe Edom, because it's been for so long, but the great granddaddy of them all, you know, the Avi Avos HaGullius is what? Is Mitzrayim. And yet, it's not one of the four. So why not? Why is the biggest gullus of them all not the four, not part of the four? The answer that he gives is just, it's almost predictable, is that, you know, you have these four gullius, and the four gullius are really just branches that come out from the Iker Makor of gullus. But if you want to think about what gullus is, the shoresh of all gullus, and the shoresh of all tumah, that demonstrates what Gullus is about, so that's Mitzrayim. Now, what's Mitzrayim? What's the sherish of Mitzrayim? What was the big deal in Mitzrayim that sort of like underlies every Gullus? So, the essence of the Gullus in Mitzrayim, really when you think about it, what was Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim is represented by Paroi Melech Mitzrayim. The pasuk in Yecheskel says that Paro's famous line was "Li Yairi va'ani asisini," the Yor, the Nilus, is mine, and I not only made it, but I made myself, which is absolutely incredible if you think about it. But that was the attitude of Mitzrayim. There was this crazy egocentric feeling that we are it, we're the world. If we're not in the world, so then the world doesn't exist. To the extent that Paro, you know, was he really that delusional, or that was just the attitude that he had that we sort of borrow sometimes, that, you know, the world revolves around us? Whether you really think that, I don't know. But that was certainly the attitude of Paro, and that was the attitude of Mitzrayim. Which, if you think about it, that really is the big chakira that faces us all every single day of our lives, every second. The big chakira is, who's really in charge over here? Am I in charge, or is he in charge? And Paro voted, and Mitzrayim voted, we're in charge. We're the ones who are muchrach ha-metzias. We're, so to speak, the one, you know, the gods with the lowercase g. And that basically is what underlies all gullus. There's a power outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reb Hillel says, though, that there really are two aspects of gullus. One aspect of gullus, the one that we're familiar with, you know, you go to Mitzrayim, or you go to Bavel, or you go to Edom, and because of the fact you're in a foreign land with a foreign culture, so that culture rubs off on you. And maybe you're sent there to make a tikkun, Klal Yisrael is supposed to fix the whole world. Maybe it's just part of our nisayon that we have to combat against that, and we have to survive despite the fact that we live in Greece, we live in Rome, we live in America, we live in England, South Africa, wherever we happen to be. But Rav Hillel says that there's a more fundamental part of gullus. The more fundamental part of gullus, and he brings it from a pasuk in Zechariah, talking about the Milchemes Goygu Magog, that it says over there that Klal Yisrael, half of Klal Yisrael, is going to go into gullus. Where? Into the desert. That's their gullus. And it's not even going to be for very long. It's going to be torturous, it's going to be horrible, but the gullus is going to be to go into the desert. Why? There is no culture in the desert. There's lizards in the desert, cactuses in the desert. I mean, what's in the desert? The answer is that the more fundamental aspect of gullus is not to join a foreign culture, but it's just to leave where you were. That's really what gullus is all about. You're in Eretz Yisrael, you leave. You're in America, you leave. You're in Europe, you have to leave. Now that's very, very important for us, particularly this week, because we're all here, and you know, whether you're from Los Angeles or someplace very far, you know, or someplace very close, yeah, like RBS, doesn't really matter, because Lemaisa, everybody in this room is really here because they were Goyel Makom Torah. Goyel Makom Torah. Which means that they left their home, they came here for a specific amount of time, and now you're going to go back. So in order to appreciate what you did and what you're about to do, so we first have to ask ourselves is, why is it that the intrinsic nature of Golus is not necessarily joining the foreign culture, but just leaving where you are? Another question. Parsha this week by Yaakov Pekudei, those who are still into Bekiyas, Rachmana Litzlan. So Yaakov Pekudei is a very, very enjoyable parsha. Why? Because you learned all of the information before, and now you can just like cruise, you know, do 45 psukim in, you know, 15 minutes or less. And there are like about four Rashis in the whole Parshas Vayakel. Now, one of the Rashis in Parshas Vayakel talks about a very, very interesting medrash. The Pasuk says, by the Aron, the Vayas Betzalas Aron, Atzei Shitim, etc., and so forth. The Medrash asked the question, what's going on over here? Vayas Betzalel es Aaron. V'chi Betzalel osel atzmai. Betzalel made the Aaron over here. This was the only thing that Betzalel made. Shebechol davar v'davar, in everything that Omer, Vayas Betzalel. It doesn't really say Vayas Betzalel, but it's a continuation that Betzalel is the one who is responsible for the building. And therefore, why are we speaking out over here? Vayas Betzalel es Aaron. Ella, we want to mention the name Betzalel at least once. Al shenosa nafshoy olav b'yoser. Since Betzalel was the one who was nosa nafshoy, that needs a good taich. He gave his nefesh. It's not mesiras nefesh, but he gave of himself more than everybody else. I would say that the Mishkan was Nikra al Shemai. The Pasuk says that it was the Mishkan was that which Betzalel built. Yeah? Like Kipacha Kodesh Baruch Hu Scharai. Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't even take away his schar. Usually, you know, when you get a little bit of fame, that's why it's not good to be in the newspapers, and it's not good that everybody should know about the things that you do. Why? Because you lose your schar in Olam Haba. If you become famous for doing good things, kipach schara, you lose some of your schar. But here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw in his name and said, Betzalel, he's the one who made the Mishkan, mentions his name over here. Upirsumay akasav, I'll call davar v'davar. Why? Because we want everybody to know that the person who's nesei nafshay on the Mishkan, he gets mentioned. People have to know. It's very important to be nesei nes nafshay. You don't even lose your schar when they're mefarsim. Well, what's the big deal about telling everybody that Betzalel was Nesei Nefs Nafshay? What does it mean to be Nesei Nefs Nafshay? What's the concept? What did Betzalel do that was so important? Ad Kedei Kach, that normally when you try to keep things quiet, don't mention his name 400 times. No one wants to hear it. But if you hear, no, it's important. What Betzalel did was very, very special. And we have to know because it's a lesson to us. So what are we supposed to learn from Betzalel? One more nakuda, and we'll get to business. I saw a very interesting thing. I heard, actually, a very interesting thing this week. It's really about a halacha in Hilchas Gittin. But it ties into halacha in Hilchas Shabbos also. They're learning Erevin a little bit in the afternoon. One of the halachas I saw... Haitzah is very, very interesting. Why? Because it's one of the Lamites Melachas. All the Lamites Melachas are creative except for one. Haitzah is not creative. You just take something and you move it from Rishus HaRabim, Rishus HaYachid, or vice versa. And Taisvis says, Rishainim say, that's why Haitzah is called a Melacha Gerua. It's considered to be a lower level Melacha. Aye, but the Melachas are all creative, so how does it fit in? So the Rishonim say it already. It is creative. Why? Because if you have a car and it's in the Rishus HaYachid, it's not the same car as it is in the Rishus HaRabim. There's a difference depending on where the thing is. Heard this week that the Maral says the same thing about Gittin. Everybody knows that. And a get, you have to have Shema Ish, Shema Isha, Makom, Zman. Simple way of understanding is Zman is a takana d'rabbanan. Makom, why you need Makom? Because otherwise, you know, Shnei Yosef ben Shimon be'ir achas, right? If you don't have where it is, so then you're not going to be able to figure out who you're talking about as well. It's an identity mark. The Maral says not that. The Maral says is something much deeper. The Maral says is that if you want to know who a person is, you have to tell us where he is. Although he's not the same person. In Europe, when they called people, they didn't just call people by their first names. You know, they called them Arla Minsker. They're Aaron Cutler, right? Just because they called them by where they were from. That's part of your identity. Your place is part of who you are. It's not just that we can find you. But what does that mean? So on one hand you have Gullus. The essence of Gullus is take you away from where you are. The Maral says that in a get, part of who somebody is their location. If I'm in New York, I'm a different person than if I'm in Chicago, or if I'm in L.A., or if I'm in Eretz Yisrael. And finally, what does it mean when we say that Bezalel was nesin es nafshay on the Mishkan? What's nesin es nafshay? He worked harder than other people? They all put in the same 14-hour days. He did more things, pashtus, he did less things. The one who's in charge is always the one who's doing all the managing and everything. Most probably, he's not sweating as much as everybody else, you know? He's the one who's giving all the orders. So what does it mean, nesin es nafshay? You put all this together, and I think you get a very, very big insight for the tekufa that we're in, and Bezer Hashem will be next week, 2 weeks, whatever, and take with us, and be able to make an honest assessment and judgment of where we're really holding. So a couple of months ago, so when I was back in the States, I had a very interesting experience. Because I went to visit, as you know, I went to visit my in-laws, and my in-laws, they moved a couple of years ago from the house, you know, the house that that my wife grew up in, at least for a lot of her childhood. They moved around the corner to a condominium in the area. But before I left, so on my way to the airport, So the person who was taking me to the airport so took me back to my in-law's old house, which my wife's sister and her husband, they bought the house now, and they were doing renovations and, you know, whatever it is. Show me, you know, what's going on over there. And it's still the same house and everything, you know, little different things or whatever. Character changed slightly. But it was very, very interesting because I remember about, it's now almost 2 years, a year and a half, 2 years ago, the last time that I was there before this. So the house looked like a hurricane hit it because my in-laws had already moved out. They were in any shape to start taking all the stuff out, but it had to be done. So you had in the living room all these piles of stuff, and a torn up carpet, and you know, whatever, and old furniture, and things that are being given away. And you have these four sisters, and it was like color warp. Because two of the sisters are very, very practical type. You know, it's like, okay, fine, you know, what do we need that for? In the garbage. This, who needs that? You know, well, you're never going to use that again. And even if you do use it, it's not worth the money. You can get something cheaper. That's two of them. The other two are like, what do you mean? This is my, you know, class project from Morachani. Yeah, these are my pictures from third grade. You know, how can I do that? And I remember when I was 6 years old and I wore this dress. How could you throw it in the garbage? It's pretty obvious, like, what side we're on. But, you know, I remember when the same thing happened to me 10 years ago. I went back to Muncie. And my parents, after 40 years or so in the house, so they were selling the house in Muncie. And I come back to my room, my old room, And there in my room are like these piles of all of my stuff. Okay, you know, you got to go through this now because, you know, there's a side was worth keeping and whatnot. And I was like, I couldn't do it. You know, Baruch Hashem, I was only there for like, you know, a long weekend. And I'm like, okay, fine. And it was like, I didn't have enough time, you know. It's heartbreaking. It's totally heartbreaking. You have all of your stuff there. What am I going to keep? Because they're just, okay, fine, you know. In a certain way, you can get nostalgic and it can start to feel good or whatever. But then you realize they're selling the house. One of my brothers, who's a very, very intense and intellectual, intelligent individual, said he just stayed away from the house the whole time that my parents would go through this. You know, I don't know how my parents made it out of that alive. You know, it's heartrending. But my brother stayed away. And they said to him, you know, come on, you know, whatever. It's just, you know, you're a cool, calm, and collected guy. He's like, what do you mean? He goes, I'm probably going to be the biggest basket case of everybody, you know? You're giving away my house. People develop a very, very strong attachment to their survives, to their surroundings. A person who doesn't have a kesher to Torah, who doesn't really have a strong kesher to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, a Jew, what's he called? An Am Haaretz. He's a person of the land. Because the land defines you. You become attached to your land, you become attached to your house, you become attached to your neighborhood, you become attached to friends in that neighborhood. And as much as you think you have Bechira, that basically defines who you are and who you're going to be. People who are not part of Klal Yisrael, what do we call them in Aleinu? Goyei Ha'aretzos. The nations of the lands. The same thing. But what happens when Klal Yisrael needs to go to Gullus? When we need to go to Gullus, basically, our Kadosh Baruch Hu has told us, listen, you are in this place, let's say Europe, for, you know, a good couple hundred years or whatever it is, and it ain't working anymore. Or you are in Eretz Yisrael, it's not working anymore. And since you're so attached to this place, and you've become these types of people in this place, what we're going to have to do to shake you up a little bit or give you an opportunity to change is detach you from your land and take you somewhere else. That's why the intrinsic nature of Gullus is not we have to put you in somewhere with a foreign culture, but we have to take you away from everything that you know and love, everything that's become part of you. Why? Because like the Maharal says, Reuven in New York is not the same as Reuven in Chicago. So you put him somewhere else, he becomes somewhere else, somebody else. But that's only half the job. Because once you go somewhere else, and your whole personality has loosened up a little bit, you know, you don't have your friends back at home anymore, and you don't have your Krispy Kreme donuts, and, you know, I would say all of your entertainment and sports, but that's not true anymore, unfortunately, right? But, you know, at least it should be a little bit better. So then what do you have to do? What you have to do is you have to find a higher identity. You have to identify with something else. And that's what really being in Gullus really, really is all about. Being Gullus and Makom Torah, that's certainly what it's all about. Identifying with a higher ideal that I'm more than just my location. And in a certain way, that's what we say over here, the Betzalel. What does it mean that Betzalel was the one that we call his name on the Mishkan? Is because Betzalel was Nesen es Nafshe. What that means is Betzalel's entire life was given over to the Mishkan like a Rosh Yeshiva. Does the Rosh Yeshiva necessarily do all of the work in the Yeshiva? No. Does he do the most work in the Yeshiva? Not necessarily. There are all kinds of Tafkidim that he doesn't do. He's the one who takes the achrayas. He's the one who identifies with what's going on the most. And therefore, it's nikra al shemai. When a person moves away from something and forges a new identity, you have to decide, what is my identity now? Who am I really? And then there's a litmus test. The litmus test, I always say, is what happens when you go back? I remember the feeling very, very well. Once, twice, three times, four times, even after I got married a little bit, you know, you go back, you get off of the plane, you walk into this, into the airport, feels very geschmack, I must admit. Then you get back, you get out, and you start, you know, go back to your house, everything feels different. The stairs are not the same level as the stairs in Eretz Yisrael. You know, at least in my house, they were much steeper or whatever. And the light switches are different types of light switches. And then you just start looking at the people, you know, the people in shul and everything. And, you know, like, I hate to say it, but, like, you look at the people and you feel like I'm a Martian and you're on Earth, or you're a Martian and, you know, whatever. And I'm on Earth. But it's just, you just feel, you know, and it lasts for like a day or two or three or something like that, you know. It starts to evaporate pretty fast, but you feel that. You feel that. Why? Because up until a good number of months ago, so I was, you know, one of the Gaya Aratzis over here. I was one of the Amea Aretz over here. I had a total connection to this place. I go away, and now I come back. I remember when I think it was after my second year, when my across the road neighbor, whose son was also in yeshiva with me, and he was an unbelievable person, Zichrono Livracha. But he was so proud, and he says, "Yeah, you probably came back to this place now, and you say, 'What am I doing here? There's nothing here. You're in Eretz Yisrael. You're learning. It's a different story altogether.'" I said, "Yeah, you're right." I said, "But unfortunately, every time I read the New York Times, I feel like that feeling is waning. You know, it's going down and down and down and down. I'm afraid what's going to happen in another 2 weeks." It's true. What's the solution? There is no solution. It happens. It happens to everybody. But you can judge. You can judge how much you forged a different identity by what happens to you when you go back. The fact that you detached yourself and you came here and you learned, and everybody grew, every single person grew. But how much do you identify with what you're doing here, and how much do you still identify with your life back there? How much are you looking forward to Dunkin' Donuts and the Krispy Kreme and to all of the things that you're missing over there? Fine, go, do it, right? But is that you, or is it not? I always say to people, you know, I'm very, very against the flip-out movement. The flip-out movement is just a flip-out, because the flip-out movement basically means is like, okay, fine, you know, I was black, now I'm white. I was green, now I'm red. But what really going to yeshiva means is that a person just takes himself, makes himself into a Ben Torah, and makes a higher, and I'll say holier, you than he was before. He's the same person, nothing really changed, just all of his goodness and all of his greatness and all of the she'ifas that he had to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his mitzvahs naturally come out when he's in yeshiva. How much of a staying power does it have when you go back home? Okay, you'll find out. And don't get down on it, you know, if it doesn't work as well as you thought that it would. But it's a good litmus test. Because you get to see, number one, you go back there, hey, what happened? It's not the same as it was before. But on the other hand, you get to see, you know, how much do I really want this? How much do I identify? How much am I nosei nafshei and everything that I was doing during the Zman? Or, chas v'shalom, is it just something that I'm doing because, you know, that's the thing to do. I'm there with everybody else. A person could go back and, you know, whatever, try to live up to ideals and to live up to everything that he gained over the last number of months. So come back from Bein HaZmanim, Be'ezus Hashem, refreshed, and he'll be very proud of himself. I would venture to say also his parents will be very, very proud of him as well, unless he uses, you know, the Torah as a kardom. See, don't use the Torah as like a hatchet. What it uses it for is don't use it in order to, you know, to take money out of people, right? But if you say to your parents, "Oh no, I can't help clean for Pesach because I'm too busy learning," it's also using the Torah as a kardom. So if you're a mensch about it, though, and you act like you did here over the last number of months, you come back refreshed, you come back with a very good feeling about everything that happened over Bein HaZmanim. And the parents will also see, not that there's any flip out, but that you're just a higher and holier you, and that you enriched yourself and made yourself into a bigger person, a better person. And Be'ez Hashem, so it should be a good next couple of days doing Dinner de Garmi. And then after that, so you guys will be ready to go on the plane or on the bus down the highway, or those of you who are staying, so everybody should have a chag.